This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Manhunt ends in Delaware. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, October 19. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
A man with a long criminal history has been arrested for targeted shootings yesterday in two different states. Three people were killed and two injured.
President Trump appears to have reversed course on a bipartisan health care bill that would restore subsidy payments to insurance companies.
In sports, Yankees are now one win away from the World Series after blanking the Astros in the ALCS and the NLCS. The Cubs survived by edging the Dodgers.
And the long-haul truckers, serious about preparing gourmet meals at 70 miles an hour.
They've got pretty tough jobs, working conditions, and they're in the truck cab for a long period of time. So if you don't want to live off what you can get at truck stops, a lot of them have opted to prepare their own meals in the cab, often using a variety of appliances that actually plug into the cigarette lighter, a bunch of sort of 12-volt little mini stoves.
Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith on gadgets and techniques used by truckers who refuse to be limited by truck stop food. She's here in about 20 minutes. The man believed to have killed three people in a targeted attack near a Maryland business and also suspected in a later shooting in Delaware has been arrested after a day-long manhunt. The suspect is 37-year-old Radee Prince. Harford County Sheriff Jeffrey Goller says the gunman initially fled on foot after he saw Delaware authorities searching for him. Wilmington Police Chief Robert Tracy.
During a foot chase, our suspect did discard a .380 firearm, and which has also been recovered, and he was taken into custody with no incident.
The first shooting took place around 9 a.m. yesterday at a business park in Edgewood, located about 20 miles northeast of Baltimore. All five of the victims are believed to have worked for Advance Granite Solutions, where Mr. Prince formerly worked for about 4 months. Police later linked Mr. Prince to a second shooting in Wilmington, Delaware, about 55 miles away. Court records show Mr. Prince had been fired from a job earlier this year after allegedly punching a coworker and threatening other employees. President Trump is denying that he made insensitive remarks in a phone call to the widow of a U.S. soldier. A Democratic congresswoman says Mr. Trump, while trying to be supportive, had called the widow of Army Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, who died in a deadly ambush in Niger recently, and told the widow that her husband, quote, knew what he signed up for, but when it happens, it hurts anyway. Florida Representative Frederica Wilson called the remarks so insensitive and said he should not have said that. President Trump addressed the issue during a Q&A.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it, and she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said.
Sergeant Johnson was killed when as many as 50 Islamic State fighters on motorcycles and in pickup trucks with mounted machine guns ambushed a joint U.S.-Nigerian patrol 2 weeks ago on the continent of Africa. The ambush left 4 U.S. troops and 5 Nigerian soldiers dead. President Trump has withdrawn his support for a bipartisan agreement in the Senate that would preserve government subsidies for health insurance companies. He caused confusion yesterday morning on Capitol Hill when he tweeted that he could not support bailing out insurance companies that have made a fortune with Obamacare, as he said. In previous days, the president had expressed public support, even calling the proposal a very good solution on Tuesday. It's co-sponsored by Tennessee Republican Lamar Alexander.
He still wants a block grant proposal. I think everybody in the country understands that, but that's not going to come this year. And he understands there's an interim gap, and it's better served by a bipartisan bill like this.
The bill would, as Democrats wanted, restore federal payments to insurers for 2 years. These payments offset insurance company costs for providing subsidies to lower-income consumers, which help with out-of-pocket costs. Mr. Trump has said he would cut off the payments this month without legislation authorizing those payments. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell Small Business Tech Advisor. The liberation this week of the Islamic State's self-proclaimed Syrian capital of Raqqa represents the high watermark of success for the U.S.-led coalition against the terrorist group, with the Islamic State's two main pillars of its so-called caliphate now in the hands of the U.S.-backed coalition. Washington Times military correspondent Carlo Munoz says ISIS is looking to decentralize and expand its operations through outposts elsewhere as it tries to recoup its battlefield losses in Iraq and Syria. Carlo, it's not over by any means.
It's definitely far from over. U.S. Military and intelligence officials, ever since the offensive began against the Islamic State, have always argued that while its territorial gains really spurred on the operation against the terror group, it's their ideology that really makes them so dangerous. You look at how they sort of spread their messaging through social media and other means. It's a very sophisticated propaganda operation. And, you know, with the defeats in Syria and Iraq, kind of, you know, now that's over and done with, they are looking to expand and use that very powerful propaganda operation to sort of spread their message. So, again, the fight is far from over.
Do you think, Carlo, that they'll take another shot at establishing like a geographical base like Raqqa, or since that didn't work, they'll try something else?
I think that, you know, talking about this ideology, the idea of an actual Islamic State, I don't think they're gonna move that far away from that. You see how the organization is sort of looking at ungoverned areas, particularly in North Africa and Southwest Asia, Libya and Afghanistan specifically. I think we'll see at some point after, you know, a period of sort of licking their wounds, rebuilding their ranks, trying to find alternate means of funding, and also carrying out sort of these terrorist attacks such as the Manchester bombing and others, we will see them try and take another shot at reestablishing of the caliphate. Now, where that will be, that remains to be seen. There's been a lot of activity with Islamic State in the Asia-Pacific region, and it seems that that area particularly has had a lot of difficulty in dealing with sort of radical insurgent movements. So if I were to guess, I would think the Islamic State would probably look in that part of the world to try and reestablish their caliphate.
We're speaking with Carlo Munoz, military correspondent at the Washington Times. His piece is called Islamic State's Caliphate Dissolves, but Ideology and Operations Spread Around the World. You mentioned rebuilding the ranks, too. Is that going to be difficult? Because if I understand correctly, like, leaders have deserted them. The guys who came in late were kind of new. Maybe they weren't trained as well. They got tired quickly. How do they rebuild?
Well, I guess, you know, it's one of those things where you're absolutely right. Once these sort of fresh-eyed recruits coming in from Tunisia, elsewhere in Western Europe, et cetera, saw the situation on the battlefield, they were obviously disheartened. The U.S.-led coalition was a very formidable force in both Iraq and Syria. But again, I think it all goes back to ideology. There are pools of sort of young, angry, disenfranchised individuals who are looking for a group like Islamic State. And again, the battlefield victories, while significant, those wins will fade. History tells us that.
Yeah.
And, all it's going to take is another sort of instance like the Bataclan attacks in Paris. Again, I mentioned the Manchester bombings, even potentially a strike here in the United States. That could be enough to sort of bolster the organization, you know, once that message gets put through their propaganda operation to recruit the people that they need and to kind of reestablish this sort of invincibility that they had at the peak of their power in the Middle East.
You point out, too, I think it was a whopping 90% of their oil money has been cut off, right? So where do they turn for funds?
Well, you know, that's kind of the, you know, million-dollar question. You know, oil revenues were obviously a big piece of how they raised their money, and that was directly tied to the territory they held in Iraq and Syria. Now, you know, I guess with an organization like Islamic State, you know, you have to sort of look again to sort of illicit markets. While it may not necessarily be, you know, illegal oil sales in the Middle East, they could go the same route as the Taliban has, where they sort of leverage the drug trade in that country.
Thanks, Carlo. That is Carlo Munoz, military correspondent at The Washington Times. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Caught in a sweeping multi-state manhunt that kept the Mid-Atlantic region on high alert for more than 10 hours ended when law enforcement officers on foot chased down a man they say shot six people, killing three in two separate shootings. Police say 37-year-old Radee Prince of Elkton, Maryland, shot five co-workers early yesterday at a granite company in Maryland, then drove to Wilmington, Delaware, and shot an acquaintance at a used car lot. Wilmington Police Chief Robert Tracy says authorities were on high alert.
This is a desperate person. He's already killed three people. He shot six altogether. And he still had a firearm on him.
The owner of the granite company told police Prince was a machine operator. President Trump is rejecting claims that he was disrespectful to the grieving family of a slain soldier as the firestorm he ignited over his assertions of empathy for service members spreads into a third day. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was asked about the president's contention that he has proof about what was and wasn't said.
Are there recordings of his phone call with Maisha Johnson?
No, but there were several people in the room.
Florida Congresswoman Frederica Wilson says the president had called the widow of Army Sergeant LeDavid Johnson, who died in a deadly ambush in Niger recently, and told the widow that her husband knew what he signed up for. But when it happens, it hurts anyway. Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee pressed Attorney General Jeff Sessions to provide information. And again, in nearly 5 hours of testimony yesterday, Sessions refused.
I do not confirm or deny the existence of any communication between the president that I consider to be confidential.
The lawmakers asked for more details about Sessions' conversations with Trump before he fired James Comey, the former FBI director, and pardoned Joe Arpaio, the former sheriff in Arizona. Well, there's always talk of cheating in sports, but it usually applies to human competitors. Now it's spreading to the animal kingdom. The governing board of the Iditarod says several dogs tested positive for the opioid pain reliever tramadol. The team was tested 6 hours after finishing the nearly 1,000-mile race in Alaska in March. The musher's name has not been released.
Ooh, that's disappointing. You know, the one thing, you're doing it to yourself, you know, you have
know,
an idea. When you're doing it to an animal who
sad.
Can't, you know, refuse. Yeah. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. In a bid to stay healthy, save money, or simply satisfy a discerning palate, some long-haul truck drivers have grown determined to make their own meals in an environment where nearly everything works against them. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith climbed aboard to sample what's cooking while rolling 18 wheels at 70 miles an hour. Jennifer, what'd you find?
These over-the-road truckers they've got pretty tough jobs, working conditions, and they're in the truck cab for a long period of time. So if you don't want to live off what you can get at truck stops, a lot of them have opted to prepare their own meals in the cab, often using a variety of appliances that actually plug into the cigarette lighter, a bunch of sort of 12-volt little mini stoves, including one known as a lunchbox cooker, which looks, as the name implies, and heats up food and can sort of reheat frozen stuff and actually, you know, cook meals as well.
Wow. How elaborate can you get?
Well, you can get pretty elaborate, and this can depend on the size of the cab that you have. You know, one driver I spoke with, she and her boyfriend, the cab of the truck that they drive is big enough that they actually have a sink with a tank of water underneath. But that's a luxury a lot of truckers don't have. Space is usually pretty tight, so maybe you're just working with 12-volt appliances. Some people have inverters or auxiliary power units that allow them to plug in a couple more appliances at one time. But you got to be pretty careful, sort of switching what's plugged in and what's not. Make sure you're not, running down the power. And then, of course, there's sort of what you do if you are short an ingredient, like the trucker that I talked with who is from Louisiana. He really had a craving for jambalaya, and he was snowed in, and he didn't have any sausage, but he did have some Slim Jim. Voila.
That was a great story. He just kind of included the spice, right? He had some rice on hand and a can of chicken juice or something?
A canned chicken, some tomato sauce, and because that guy was from Louisiana, he says he always travels with some Creole seasoning, but he said he didn't even have to add that much.
Wow.
Because I guess, the Slim Jim has a fair amount of spice. Maybe it's sort of, you could think of it almost like a chorizo in a way.
How about that? Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith about her story entitled Pedal to the Kettle, Gourmet Truckers Fix Savory Meals at 70 Miles an Hour. There's even a place where they swap recipes, these truckers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very, very busy. There's a couple different online groups. The one called Big Truck Cooking, a couple other groups where folks get together, they swap tips. There's also trucker message boards where experienced drivers might advise newcomers on how to sort of cook on the road, what some good starter equipment to get. There's a whole sort of online community that's grown up around this.
Thanks, Jennifer. Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you travel for business, you know it's a game of wins and losses. Popping open an overhead bin and finding it empty? Win. Sleeping through a wake-up call? Loss. Buying your business trip at Upside.com? That's not just a win, it's a triple win. Number one, Upside has the absolute best available prices for flights, hotel, and rental cars. Win number two, Upside will reward you with a gift card to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. And number three, the amazing 6-star treatment you'll get from Upside's customer service specialists, who they call navigators. And I'm going to start your Upside 6-star treatment right now. Go to Upside.com and use my code DEAL, and you'll get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. That's code DEAL for a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com when you buy your next business trip at Upside.com. Upside.com, you deserve a better business trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, October 19. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Delaware man arrested for deadly shootings. Trump now opposes a bipartisan measure on health care. 30 years ago today was Black Monday for the stock market. Flash flooding risks in the Northwest today. Massachusetts school cancels its Halloween parade, saying it's not inclusive enough. A poll by Politico finds 46% of us think the media makes up fake Trump stories. And the Jeopardy contestant who won with $1. Hear the question that stumped everyone, well, except probably Alex Trebek, in about 20 minutes. You're going to hear a lot about self-driving cars before they actually arrive. Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman says the big automakers are all vying to be the leader in autonomous technology. But there's a catch. Rolling it out too fast risks turning off drivers and even harming them. Rick, what have you found?
Well, there's certainly tons of hype about self-driving cars. Automakers are, you know, every week some new automaker announces some new advance. Tesla, of course, pushing hard on this technology, and everybody's interested in what Tesla's doing. But, I recently rode in a demo car. This is a technology Nissan is actually putting into its cars that anybody can buy in a showroom the 2018 Nissan Leaf. It'll soon come to other models. And it's just not quite as revolutionary. The stuff that we can actually buy, the technology we can actually buy these days, is not as revolutionary as everything we hear about. And in fact, the automakers, for all the talk, and you know, they all want to promote how far ahead they are on this,
yeah,
and sort of get pole position on this new technology. They're actually rolling it out fairly slowly, and that's because of concerns about safety. Obviously, some of the technology is not as proven as you might think, given all the hype in the media. That regulations are not really established for some of this stuff, and I think some of the automakers, not all of them, they understand that if they roll this out too fast and something goes wrong, well, there could actually be a public backlash against self-driving technology, and that might actually slow the development of this technology even more. So they're actually being pretty cautious.
As we've seen with a couple of these crashes, right, that's, I guess maybe it's human nature. It's the first thing that jumps to mind, right? Just the worst case scenario with these things is, I think, what some of us think about.
Yes. And, you know, by the way, almost all crashes are caused by human error. It's pretty unusual that it's actually caused by a malfunction in the vehicle.
Yeah.
But, of course, we want to jump to the conclusion that it couldn't have been me.
Right.
It couldn't have been the driver. It had to be some flaw in the vehicle. And I'm sure that sort of bias will persist as, autonomous technology takes over as well. Now, there was one very high-profile crash of a Tesla Model S in Florida last year, where the driver was essentially decapitated after his car, which was in what Tesla calls autopilot mode, their self-driving mode, failed to detect the tractor trailer that was turning in front of it on a four-lane highway. and the car actually, the Tesla actually slammed into the 18-wheeler, slid underneath it after the truck sheared the top off the car, and that vehicle never even slowed down. That car was going 74 miles per hour in self-driving mode. It hit the truck at 74 miles per hour. So pretty clear that that technology did not detect the truck as it should have, and also clear that the driver did not retake control of the car, is what the driver is supposed to do based on the technology we have today. So what we don't know is, did the driver fall asleep? What happened? Why was he not paying attention? We don't know that.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. His piece is called Why Self-Driving Cars Are in the Slow Lane. You know, I was thinking about this, and I thought, the guarantee I'd like, I want to be able to read or nod off, check my phone, yet feel completely safe. And if that guarantee isn't there, it's kind of a hard sell, right?
Well, you want it all, Gordon. I mean, come on. You know what? I drive a lot of cars because I do cover the automotive industry, among other things. And, you know, there are a few of these technologies that are actually very cool, even though they are not completely self-driving technology. And I'll just tell you about one of them. It's called automated cruise control or radar cruise control. And what this does, it's like regular cruise control where you set a maximum speed, but then the car uses sensors and software to tell how far the car, how far ahead the car in front of you is, and then it can speed up the car or slow it down on its own, just by knowing how far ahead the car in front of you is. So if you set it at 70, and then traffic slows to 35, the car will automatically slow itself to 35,
yeah.
And then when traffic picks up again, it'll go right back up to 70 or whatever maximum speed you set. And that's actually a very cool feature in a number of different scenarios.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman, who's based in New York. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, it should go without saying, if you're going to steal a car, you might want to take care to make sure you don't leave your wallet behind. That's what appears to have happened in Springfield, Missouri, where a nurse working a 12-hour shift came out to the parking lot to discover her Toyota Camry was missing. Police later found the car abandoned, but not before the thief made off with a laptop computer, a .38-caliber revolver, and a pair of stethoscopes. The thief also left behind some items, including fast food receipts and snack foods, and another potentially important clue, a wallet containing a driver's license and other documents. Police said they're investigating whether the man pictured on the driver's license was the thief. The thief is not the first to leave behind important clues at a crime scene. A car burglar in Naples, Florida, was found to have targeted at least 7 cars, and the items he dropped at the various scenes included his wallet, an iPod, and multiple t-shirts. And who could forget the burglary suspect in California who was arrested in August after leaving behind an even more unusual piece of evidence, unflushed poop in the victim's toilet.
Nice, Mike.
Remember that one?
Yeah, no.
Oh, you don't remember that one?
No, I don't remember that one. I can always rely on you to bring up the poop story.
Yes. Yeah. That guy goes on the Dumb Criminal Hall of Fame. Yeah. If we're going to have a Hall of Fame, he's on the Mount Rushmore for sure.
Here's the DNA sample. I'll just hand it to you.
For sure.
Yeah. But the guy who initially had stole that Camry from the nurse,
yeah,
right, that wallet was found in the car, but given the fact that all the other stuff that was in the car, I guess it could have been somebody else's wallet if
right.
he was on some kind of spree, right?
right. That's I guess that's what they're saying. They're still not sure if the two of them match up, but you'd have to think is a pretty good chance.
Yeah. Foods, fast food receipts, snack foods.
Yeah.
Probably some DNA evidence there also.
Having a good time.
Yeah, these guys are geniuses.
And what's better, Gordon, than a burrito when your stomach is growling? How about a burrito dropped from a drone? Google's parent company Alphabet has teamed up with a Mexican restaurant to test drone deliveries in Australia. The tests are being conducted in a rural community where consumers are typically forced to take a 40-minute round trip in the car for almost anything they need. Alphabet previously tested burrito deliveries by drone in Virginia, along with Chipotle and researchers from Virginia Tech. But those tests occurred in an open field, not to a specific address or location like these tests being conducted in Australia.
Mm.
Now, burritos, I think, are a very, very big test of this drone delivery technology. Because to me, burritos, they have to be the exact right temperature and consistency, right?
Okay.
You don't want them. You don't want to be, flying them for, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
They're hot for too long. Mm. Then the vegetables inside get all wilted. Mm. The outside gets all weird looking. You need them to be absolutely perfect. So they can't be too cold.
Okay.
They can't be too hot. They can't take too long. So if you can perfect delivering a burrito, I think this drone delivery thing's going to take right off.
This is it. This revolutionizes the world.
I believe so. And I believe that's why they picked burritos, because they are a very delicate food that needs to be delivered perfectly, as far as I'm concerned.
The only thing I think that's working in the drone delivery favor here is that if you've been drinking and have a hankering for burritos,
right,
you're not that discerning of taste.
I guess so.
After a few beers in.
Sure, yeah. I'm talking about how I like my burritos sober. When I've been drinking, that's a whole different deal.
Got it, right. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Thanks for spending time with us on this Thursday. Set aside time now and in November to take advantage of four tips that can save you hundreds, possibly thousands of dollars on your 2017 taxes. They're from Kiplinger.com. Number one, donate stock that's appreciated in value. With the stock market hitting record highs this year, it's worth considering. By making a $10,000 donation in stock that has doubled in value, saves you nearly $6,000 in taxes, including $1,500 in future capital gains taxes. Number two, increase taxes withheld from your paycheck. If it appears you will need to pay additional taxes when you file in April, increase the amount deducted from each paycheck right now by filing changes on a W-4 form. Waiting till December won't help you much. Number three, increase your 401k contributions. Saving more money now can mean that less of your 2017 income is subject to taxes. And number four, top off your health savings account. Make contributions by year's end instead of doing it through mid-April of next year. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a bipartisan group of governors is urging congressional leaders to support a plan to calm health insurance markets after President Trump blocked federal subsidies to insurers. The bipartisan agreement by Senators Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray calls for a two-year extension of the subsidies. Alexander says this is the best way forward.
The president's pretty shrewd to understand that there's a gap here that needs to be filled, and the only way to fill it is by a bipartisan agreement like the one we suggested yesterday.
The comments come as President Trump signaled opposition to the bipartisan deal after initially supporting it. The Dow Industrials have surged past 23,000, but the latest milestone masks a potentially worrisome trend. Investors keep yanking money out of stock funds. Investors pulled about $36 billion out of funds over the summer. So far this year, more money has flowed out of funds than has flowed in. For now, Mark Hamrick of Bankrate.com says all is well.
This rally seems unabated, and it seems as if we set new records on an almost daily basis. Corporate profits have done well, and that's one of the key underpinnings for a stock market rally. Interest rates are low and inflation is low.
Many investors are concerned that the steady rise in the market has left shares looking expensive. Transgender people would be allowed to use public restrooms in North Carolina that match their gender identity under a settlement agreement that aims to resolve the federal lawsuit over the state's widely criticized bathroom law. Civil rights groups say the consent decree proposed by Governor Roy Cooper, the ACLU, and transgender people who sued the state would remove some of the law's harmful effects. The judge in the case must sign off on the proposal before it takes effect. The Cubs will live to see another day after holding off the Dodgers 3-2 last night in the NLCS. Dan Shulman had the call on ESPN Radio as Javier Baez busted out of an 0-for-20 slump.
The 0-1 and a swing and a fly ball left field. Pretty deep. Wind's blowing out. She's gone. Second home run of the night for Baez. And the Cubs extend the lead to 3-1.
The Dodgers still lead the series 3-1. In the ALCS, the Yankees blank the Astros 5-0 to lead that series 3-2.
Very good. That Dan Shulman, I like him.
He's great.
He's good on the radio. Definitely like him. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Sometimes it's how many you win and not how you won, such is the case for a returning champion on the TV show Jeopardy, who managed to come out on top by winning just $1. Manny Abel, despite the low amount, captured victory for the third night in a row.
Manny, congratulations. You win the game with a dollar. The smallest win in many, many, many years, and you now have a three-day total of $42,799. Whoops, indeed.
The naval officer from Lacey, Washington, managed to best his competitors on Tuesday night, but he ended up winning just $1 when all three players missed the final Jeopardy question. The question that stumped everybody two nights ago, by the way, was, what country bordered the Caspian Sea and the Persian Gulf? Mr. Abel guessed Iraq, but the correct answer was Iran. Something, of course, that Alex Trebek pretended he knew. Jeopardy said Mr. Abel is only the second regular champion to win with a total of only $1 after Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Darrell Scott pulled off a similar feat way back in 1993. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.